What's up, everybody, and welcome to the episode 51 of the Lukewarm Games Podcast, your weekly source for unique perspectives on all things video games and pop culture. As always, I'm your host, Luke Lewis, this week joined by the interior decorating diva of Animal Crossing, Claire Helmberger.
Hey, everybody, what's up? How's it going?
Good, how are you?
I am doing good. I am ready to talk about video games.
Hey.
Good place to be.
That's what we talk about on this podcast.
Yeah.
Right on. Well, why don't we just get right into things? I wanted to jump into We've Got the News, but before we get started on our topic, I wanted to just give a quick shout-out to all of the people, employees of Blizzard and also Activision larger, that are coming forward and speaking about their past and their harassment that they endured while working at Activision. And I just wanted to say that as a podcast, we stand with them and we hear you and we see you. And there's not a ton of news to discuss within that other than it's abhorrent and just horrible, everything that's coming out about the executives and the leadership at Activision, especially Blizzard. It makes me really sad, and I want the industry to be better, and I'm glad that there is, you know, legal action being taken place.
Yeah.
I'm glad people are coming forward, and I'm glad the industry as a whole is trying to support people doing so.
I'm glad that hopefully it's looking like this sort of disgusting behavior that's been happening there is going to need to be put to a stop now.
Yeah.
Thanks to the people who've come forward and said what's happening.
I also want to be clear, too, that a lot of people have come forward and said, like, this isn't just happening in Activision.
Right.
Like, this is happening across the industry. And I hope that the industry is now becoming a space where those conversations can be had and support can be achieved and people don't feel trapped. Like,
right.
They can't speak about what's happening to them and speak about these atrocities and, like,
yeah,
be in a safe work environment where they're comfortable creating
right.
art. Creating video games that are ultimately supposed to bring people joy.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I hope that we are going to work together as a society to really just take a stand against this behavior wherever we see it, especially within the games industry. Hopefully, you know, this encourages more people to come forward with their stories, and we all kind of support the people who do come forward and just make it known that kind of behavior is not okay, and we just need to not tolerate it where we see it, for those of us who are in a situation where we are close to
totally.
Things but like that, when they happen, we can put a stop to it.
For sure. I just wanted to give that disclaimer, and
yeah,
like I said, I don't feel like that we need to unpack all the stories. There's a lot to digest out there, but I just hope it's going to lead to positive change for those employees.
Yes.
Because they deserve it.
Yes.
Cool.
Our hearts are with them.
Definitely. So on a lighter note, let's jump into We've Got the News, our weekly news segment, where we break down what's going on in the video games industry. Last week, we saw a fantastic showcase from Annapurna Interactive, one
yeah.
of our favorite game publishers, of some wonderful indie titles. And I wanted to kind of unpack the different game announcements we saw, as well as the updates on some different developer projects and things, and just kind of talk about what we saw and what we thought. This was the first press conference that Annapurna had ever done in this style, kind of akin to an E3 presentation, and I gotta say, I really loved it. I was
yeah.
excited about basically every game that they showed. I thought the vibe of their games is just always so unique and so cool, and it was really fun to see multiple of their titles showcased in one presentation. What did you think?
Yeah, I thought it was really cool. I was definitely intrigued by everything that they showed, which is not always or not often the case at these kinds of, you know, showcases. And I was really excited about all the partnerships that they showed,
yeah,
and the moments
sure.
where they like sat down with the creators, that even though they didn't say here's the game that we're working on per se, and
mm-hmm.
all of those, it was just cool to be able to kind of take a peek behind the curtain and kind of get our hopes up for some cool stuff that we'll be hearing about soon, hopefully.
For sure. And I think it all of the interviews that they did with developers and just the way they showed off their games, I thought was very true to form for Annapurna. They tell very, like, human stories,
yeah.
very grounded, often very stylized and unique ways, and I felt like they really let the developers speak for themselves.
Yeah.
And really showed off what they had to offer. So let's jump into some of the games that were shown, and I want to touch on, you mentioned the partnerships that they talked about. Specifically, they talked about Outer Loop Games, who was the team behind Falcon Age, Ivy Road, which is a new studio founded by Davey Wearden and Carla Zomaja. I'm probably butchering your last name. I'm sorry, Carla. But I love your games. She worked on Gone Home and Tacoma with Fulbright, and Davey worked on Stanley Parable and The Beginner's Guide. Two just very, very unique experiences, especially from a narrative perspective. And then they're also working with Daniel Rosenfeld, who was the composer of Minecraft. Yeah. Like, that just seems like such a cool combination of indie developer talents working together. So I can't wait to see what they come up with.
Yeah, and that was just such a great bit. They had the tea drinking.
And like it was just funny,
was
but then the music in the background was very like calming and relaxing, and yeah, so I'm super excited about that one. Back to Outer Loop Games, I haven't played Falcon Age, but I was always really intrigued by the visual style, and it looks like a game that's totally up my alley. And the footage they showed of this new skateboarding project they're working on looks really, really cool, and yeah, definitely something that's up my alley as a big fan of Tony Hawk and a big fan of like Sunset Overdrive and more like stylized games of that nature. Mm-hmm. What did you think of what they showed of the Outer Loop stuff?
I was really intrigued by the kind of themes that they were discussing and mm-hmm. what kind of brought them together. So I'm interested to see how that's going to come out in the game itself. And we just got a tiny, tiny little glimpse into what the game's going to be. And I think it looks cool too, but the part that was more intriguing for me was definitely just the way that they were talking about their project and their
experience. Yeah, and the way the developers were talking about like their experiences with immigrant culture and growing up in the U.S. and like their family life and like the way they're bringing those personal experiences into their projects is really cool.
Yeah, it was also cool because they are currently located in the Seattle area.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just kind of fun to see a little bit of that stuff happening and home region.
Yeah, for sure. That's for awesome. Sure. Another partnership they mentioned was Jessica Mack's new project, who previously worked on Everyday Shooter and Sound Shapes, which I didn't know she worked on Sound Shapes specifically, but I loved that game. Mm-hmm. The visual style, the music, it's incredible. And so anything from her, I think, will be really interesting. But the game they showed off, kind of a similarly music-driven experience, looks really cool.
Yeah.
It looks like a very visual, like, almost like, it kind of reminds me of another Annapurna game, Sayonara Wild Hearts, that's, like, very musical-driven with a very flashy visuals and crazy things happening on screen that coordinate with the music. So,
mm-hmm.
I'm excited to see what's up with that one, too.
Yeah, definitely.
Basically, this was just a 45-minute press conference of, I want to play that. Oh, that looks cool.
Yeah, that's what I was saying.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, like, every game kind of hit for me, which is rarely the case with press conferences, but friend of the show, Jacob McCourt, always says Annapurna only puts out bangers, and they've adapted that as, like, their catchphrase. Annapurna only puts out bangers, and, like, their games always resonate with me.
Yeah.
Especially. The last partnership they mentioned was No Code, which is the kind of horror sci-fi studio behind Observation. I haven't played Observation, but I've always been very intrigued by this studio, and just hear it, I always like hearing these behind-the-scenes interviews and things with developers, because when I hear the person behind the project talk about the art that they created, I'm always really interested to play it.
Right.
Hearing their inspiration, hearing what made them want to make this game, hearing how the critical reception was received. I don't know. That's always really interesting. So I almost like to, like, hear about the game, read about the game, and then check it out in a different way, too.
Yeah, for sure.
Then we saw a bunch of, some were previously announced games that we got updates on and release dates, and some were new projects. So we saw The Artful Escape, which was a really cool looking narrative based action title, but there's heavily like music integration into the game. It's kind of a weird one to describe.
Psychedelic.
Yeah, but It looked trippy in a really cool way, yeah. So I'm excited to check that one out. It's coming out in September,
and
so
also
that's
has a
really soon.
Stacked voice cast.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Some really cool people, and that's akin to Annapurna's just like pulling out all the stops, like with 12 Minutes coming out in a couple weeks, and they got Daisy Ridley and James McAvoy and Willem Dafoe.
Mm-hmm.
They're hitting it too with Artful Escape.
Yeah.
White Neon was next. I've been really
Neon White.
I'm sorry. I totally reversed it. It's Neon White. But I think we saw this at, I think it was at one of the PlayStation events over the summer, a State of Play. They showed this, but it just looks super cool. It's from Ben Esposito, who made Donut County that I played earlier this year, and it just has a really unique style to it, but it's a very fast-paced action game, and it's kind of similar. It reminds me of Blood Roots, or almost like a roguelike game where you're doing runs to try to make it through levels with a time limit, and you're score chasing, but you're utilizing these cards to pull off combos and unique abilities, and you're kind of balancing which cards to use and which cards to discard, and it's this like kind of intricate system on top of being this like crazy action platformer as you're like quickly moving through levels. But it just looks so slick and so cool and so stylish, and the gameplay looks really fun. And yeah, it's one that, like, if you had said it's a card-based action, you know, action game, I would be like, I don't know about that, because I'm generally a card-based thing is kind of a turnoff for me. But the way this is incorporated to make the action move faster, it's like so visually interesting. So excited for this one.
Yeah, it looks really cool. I wasn't super intrigued by this until I saw the bit with the developer doing that fast run, and like, here's how you do this, let's try it again, and let's try it this like differently, and like just going through it so quickly, but explaining what he was doing
in the moment,
that was really cool.
And quickly seeing how this could be pretty addictive, like this endless replayability of like, I want to beat my friend's high score, that sort of thing. And I think it's kind of a hard game to like get on board with until you see it in motion. And then I feel like once you see the movement of the game, you're like instantly like, this is interesting, there's something special here kind of thing. So I'm really interested to see what's up with that one. Coming soon to Switch, so we'll see release date wise. The next one they showed was A Memoir Blue. This game looks like it's going to wreck me.
It looks
beautiful.
Beautiful and so sad.
It's described as an interactive poem about a superstar athlete and the all-encompassing love between mother and daughter. So a lot to unpack there, but yeah, it looks soul-crushing, but it's beautiful, and I'm sure it's going to be incredibly well-written, so I'm really interested to see what's up with that one. A cute one that they showed also that has a demo available currently on Steam that I'm hoping to check out this weekend, Storyteller. It's a part puzzle game, part genre storytelling, and it's like, to describe it to listeners, if you haven't seen it, imagine a storybook with, like, panels.
It almost looks like a storyboard. Like, you're
a storyboard,
or a comic book
kind of thing, where, like, you're putting a story together, and you move characters into frame, and then you have objects that create interactions and actions.
And you're filling the parameters of the story by manipulating the characters.
So
the trailer starts
really simple, where it's like a Prince Charming type character and a princess, and then they fall in love. Story's done. But then it quickly becomes more involved of, oh, the princess dies, and then the prince has to mourn the person, or, oh, the princess wasn't in love with the princess, and like you're manipulating the objects to create different outcomes, and then they become more intricate and more involved as you get more storyboard panels as the game progresses, and it just looks really interesting.
Fun.
Yeah. Simple, but like really elegant in its design, I think. And so I'm excited to check out that free demo that's available on Steam right now. The next one they showed was Skin Deep. I don't remember a ton about this game. I'm going to click in on the trailer just to see visually. Oh, this is the like space looking shooter where you're defending
where you're
the space
insurance
station
company,
right?
And
it has like
the like puzzle shooter. It looked really cool.
Yeah, for listeners, it has kind of the art style kind of reminds me of Void Bastards, but it kind of a hyper stylized space setting where you're using, because it's not a traditional shooter, because in addition to guns you can pick up objects and throw objects at enemies, and there's like kind of a physics element to it too. Yeah. And it just looks really wacky and really interesting. Yeah. So I'm excited.
I think there was one bit where it was like, you need to kill the guy, oh, you're out of bullets, and you just, and your character just threw the gun at the airlock button and just sent him out mm-hmm. into space. It looks, yeah, kind of fun, creative vibe.
Yeah, it just looks different. I also didn't mention this, but we're pulling these game descriptions from the Annapurna Interactive breakdown that Michael McWhorter from Polygon put out. So just to give him credit, thank you, Michael, for
yeah.
compiling all these resources.
Very nice.
But, yeah, they also showed a few other games. We got a release date for Solar Ash, which is the new game from the developers of Hyperlight Drifter.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be coming in October 26th, which is the same day as Guardians of the Galaxy, so that'll be a big gaming day for me. But that game continues to look stunning. It has, like, a Shadow of the Colossus vibe as you're climbing these like huge creatures towering over
and
the environment.
Skating physics.
It kind of reminds me of what we saw the Pathless, just like this quick
traversal
thing. Blanking on words today, but yeah, just like the quick movement throughout the environments looks really cool. We also got to see Outer Wilds DLC that was unveiled, which I think was finally the kick in the pants I needed to finally play Outer Wilds.
It just looks fun.
It's been on my backlog forever, and the soundtrack is incredible. I listen to it despite the fact that I haven't played through the game, but it just looks really cool, and it looks like one of those games. I love cool exploration games where you discover the story at your own pace.
Yeah.
And that definitely sounds like what Outer Wilds is. Friend of the show, Joseph Hooper, has sung its praises on his podcast Player Pod, so I really want to check that out soon, and hopefully be ready by the time this DLC comes out. And then I don't know about you, Claire, but the star of the showcase for me was what they showed of Stray.
Oh yeah.
This action cyberpunk cat adventure. I totally didn't expect to be as interested in this game as I am, but
I know
there's something really novel about playing as a cat. It makes me think of, I was talking to a coworker the other day about this game that came out on the PS3 called Tokyo Jungle, where you played as different, like, household animals, mm-hmm. like dogs and cats, and you had to, like, fend for yourself in this, like, post-apocalyptic wilderness. And it was just a really weird game, but kind mm-hmm. of a really cool RPG, and Stray kind of hits on those notes, but also with a really, like, polished cinematic angle. Blessing Adeyoye tweeted that he was like, was Stray developed by Naughty Dog? Because the game looks stunning, and it just looks like there's a lot of complex systems of exploration, and there's like dialogue options, and you're talking to characters, and you're completing quests, and it just looks really cool. I'm excited to check it out.
Yeah, it does look really cool. I am also super stoked. I can't wait to play it.
What a weird slate of games, though, in the best way, of just such unique stories, such unique characters being represented, such unique gameplay styles. Like, I'm really excited for all these. Which one do you think is, like, if you could, like, will one into existence to be out right this second, what would you want to play immediately?
Definitely Stray, but of the ones that we hadn't heard of before that were just announced, I'm really intrigued by A Memoir Blue. So that would probably mm-hmm. be the one that I picked. What about you?
I want to play them all for sure. I think Skin Deep, after rewatching that trailer while we were recording, it really seems interesting to me. And I like the mm-hmm. comedic element, but I also like the kind of space-based shooter.
Yeah.
It just seems really fun.
It does
so
seem fun.
Excited for that one, too.
Right on.
Yeah, so ton of cool games. Go play Annapurna stuff.
Yes.
Y'all, if you haven't played Florence, if you haven't played What Remains of Edith Finch, Donut County, The Pathless.
Donut County is fun.
I think probably my favorite one of theirs is What Remains of Edith Finch, close behind Florence. Like, those two stories just really hit for me. So,
well, What Remains of Edith Finch was on our list, on our top 50.
Yes, it was, because I fought the fight.
Go listen to our 50th episode.
Yeah, that's a good plug. It's very long, but it's very fun.
It's very long.
That's my plug for that one. Cool. So that settles Annapurna stuff. Let's jump into our title track, main topic. I thought this week we would just discuss what we've been playing. I think we've both been playing a bunch of different things. There's been a ton of recent releases, whether it's on PlayStation or it's on Game Pass or Switch. So I just wanted to jump into some of the stuff we've been playing. I was going to kick things off. I've been playing Death's Door. I just got this fancy gaming PC all set up in our home studio, and I've been playing a bunch of Death's Door, and what a cool game. Paris Lilly of the Kind of Funny X-Cast was an early champion of this one, and after hearing so many people upon release when the review embargoes went up about a week or two ago, people were so excited about this game, and they were like, this is a game of the year contender. So I was immediately like, okay, I'm gonna download it. It was $20. First of all, the art style is stunning. The music is amazing. The combat is really fun. But to give listeners a quick pitch, if you're like, what's this Death's Door game? I've never heard of it. It's available on Xbox and PC, and it is a roguelite kind of Zelda style top down isometric action game where you're exploring as this little crow character, and, you are, the story is kind of unfolding as you go, but your little crow friend is responsible for reaping the souls of the dead. That's his job. And so there's a lot of like a dark comedy beats, and the writing is really clever. And it's one of those games that's gets more and more interesting as I play it. And it gives new elements to the exploration, and I think the combat is really, really fun, and you're leveling up and getting new abilities, and it's just been a while since I played a really good, like, top-down action-adventure-style game that's, like, as good as Zelda, but isn't Zelda.
Right.
So, it's been a ton of fun to jump into, and I can't wait to play more, so I want to talk about that one more once I play more, but I beat the first, I think, two big major bosses, and I keep thinking about it, so I can't wait to go back to it.
Nice. Awesome.
And you've been playing something that we've talked about on the show previously, Subnautica Below Zero, but you just finished the experience. So I thought it'd be cool to get an update on like your thoughts overall and what you thought of the journey. Did it end up being a true sequel? Like, what were your takeaways?
I was just blown away by this game. It took what was established in the first game and built on it like tenfold. And I was just blown away the entire time. It was it's gorgeous, it's fun, it's heartfelt, and it's deep in multiple ways. So if you haven't played Subnautica, any of them before, you crash land on an alien planet that is in the first game, uninhabited by other people, at first, you know, supposedly, and it's almost all water. So you have to survive and build your base and collect resources, but as you're going, you find some clues to uncover the mystery of what happened to the people who were there before you. And there's other people who were on your ship that crashed, so you're trying to figure out what happened there with your ship, and you're learning about all these other, you know, characters who'd been on the ship and reading their logs to figure out what happened to them. So it's a lot of environmental storytelling of you're finding the logs and you're reading the notes and you're listening to the recordings people made to hear what happened, and getting a lot of little stories. It gets a little bit more involved the further you go, and it's just really fun. I love that game, and I'll sing its praises for forever and ever. So Subnautica Below Zero takes place on the same planet, but in a different region, so in an Arctic region where it's like really cold, which introduces some fun new gameplay mechanics. There's some more above ground, but it's a little bit higher risk because you will freeze to death if you don't take the necessary precautions, which was not an aspect of the first game. And there are a couple different aspects of the gameplay that are a little bit different this time, too. But it's still basically the same. You are trying to survive. You got to build your base. You got to build your exploration tools that you need to get around in the world. And as you go, you are learning more about what happened only in this game, and this is the part where we kind of get into why it was so special and why it blew me away so much, in Below Zero, you're actually playing as, like, a name character who will talk and react to what she sees, and you are there with a purpose. You're not just trying to survive and get off the planet. You are playing as a character named Robin, who is looking to find out what happened to her sister, who was part of a research team on the planet, and the research team is now gone. So you're figuring out what happened to her, what happened to the research team. You're kind of trying to clear her name because she was killed and accused of causing this terrible, terrible accident. So you're trying to figure out what really happened because the company is trying to cover it up, or so you think. And you also end up there. That's like half the plot, and the other half is trying to figure out what happened with the alien species that was on the planet before, like long, long ago. And those two parts kind of intertwine together in a really cool way. And there are other characters that you interact with, which I don't think is a spoiler because there was a little bit in the trailer for the game.
No, and we talked about that on a previous episode too when you first started playing
So the way that your character interacts with the world, like, and actually is part of the story in this game, it's truly beautiful. It's, like, less of an observer and more of a, like, active role. And it's just really cool.
Nice.
And all the environments were gorgeous. I loved all the creatures, the new creatures they introduced. It was just a really good time.
For sure. And without spoiling anything, do you feel like the narrative has payoff in the end, like the arc that you go on throughout the journey? Because what I thought was kind of interesting talking to you about the game is that the game is incredibly long, and there is a lot of the survival and building and kind of simulation aspect to the game, which I don't normally associate with games with particularly strong narratives. And not that the first game didn't have an interesting narrative, it's just not what I remember from my time with the game. So how did this stack up in this new entry?
Well, I remember when you played the game, and you didn't really get that far into the narrative.
I understand that. I just meant, like, your perspective, like, how does it compare, and how does it compare, like, just to narrative games you've experienced in general?
It is definitely a unique experience in that, like, you can do what I usually do, which is, like, I'm going to spend the next 6 hours of my gameplay not engaging with the story and not advancing the story.
Well, that's kind of what I feel like I did. I got lost in the survival aspect of just, like, building out and surviving rather than...
And that happens at first. Like, when you first start both of the games, you just, like, okay, I need to eat, I need to drink, I need shelter.
Sure.
And I need to find the resources that enable that to happen for me, enable me to make that happen. But what inevitably happens is as you're looking for those resources, you're exploring and you're finding the wrecks or whatever, and you're finding the clues. And once you get the, like, basic survival and you explore a little bit further, then you find out more and more and uncover more and more of the story. And in Below Zero, I really loved how motivated I felt to go continue along the main story, and how there were those other characters that you got to interact with. And you got to kind of hear your playable character, hear Robin's input on things that you found around the world, which was cool. Because, like I said, in the first game, you're more of like a passive observer of things that have happened, and your character doesn't make any sort of commentary
and you're
or anything.
An active participant in this new.
But in this game, you really feel like you're playing as a character, and that was really cool too. But yeah, I think it is unique how the narrative is kind of on the back burner sometimes, but it is that through line and that, like, sense of urgency of, like, I'm building my base, but I really want
to.
I really
want to
go.
Yeah,
go over there. Like, I'm building this so that I can build this, so that I can build this, so that I can dive deep enough to
do that.
That's
cool. So you have that motivation to keep playing.
Yeah. And a lot of people who do faster playthroughs, I learned this reading online, apparently some people don't even build a base. They just, like, get enough storage lockers And they just stay in like the main pod and craft everything from there.
Interesting.
Because I guess you don't technically need a base. So what's
like the average play time? Because I know you were saying you played for like 50 hours.
Yeah, I played, I think it was about 48 hours to complete it for me. I'm not sure. I think the average play time, it just depends on how you want to play it. But I think that that was like
faster.
Probably the longer side of it.
Not that I have a problem with 50 hours. I'm just trying to give, you know, listeners kind of
I think you could probably mainline it and play it a little bit faster. That being said, I definitely had a shorter runtime than I would have if I'd never played a Subnautica game before, because I saved a lot of time knowing that, like, okay, I know exactly where to go to find this material, which I need to build. And, like, building, there are certain things that you should build right away that make it go so much faster that I didn't build early on at all. And when I played through Subnautica 1. And
you
might not
know that if you don't have that prior knowledge. Okay, yeah. Interesting.
But I also, like I said, some people don't build out the bases. I built the hell out of my base.
Is this a game you recommend, like, for listeners jumping into the first one? Playing alongside a guide, just so they can kind of like
the have guide those tips is and helpful. Tricks, or I would recommend. Do you
think making those self discoveries is like part of the experience?
One thing that I really liked about Below Zero is that it actually has somewhat of a map in the game that you can reference, which was a big help in the original Subnautica. There is no map, so for me, what I would recommend is if you want a little guide of like what you should do first, spoiler free, that kind of thing. But a lot of these guides, they'll tell you in order to get to blank, you need to do blank. And the first blank is a spoiler. In order to get to this cool place that you shouldn't know you're trying to get to because it's a surprise, you have to do X, Y, and Z. And so the guides is a bit of a fine line, but I would recommend using a map just in the first one.
Baseline.
Yeah. Okay. If you have, if you're stuck and you have a question, just like search your specific question. That's kind of how I played it. And I got stuck a couple times in Below Zero too. I had a glitch where one of the location signals wasn't popping up until I was like there. And then it was like, oh, here's where we need to go. And I wouldn't have known to go there if I hadn't looked it up in a guide. But, gotcha. For the most part, this game didn't need very much guiding. Right on. The first game a little bit more. But yeah, just use it sparingly because the moments in that game are so much more special if you don't know what's coming.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, I'm definitely excited to check it out at some point. It's on my... There's so many games to play.
Well, and we've talked about how, like, I can play with you, like, next to you. And that's I can kind of guide you in the right direction.
It's like I'll if you were going to play, like, an open world action game or, like, a Souls game, I would be your backseat gamer.
Maybe I should write a spoiler-free guide, and I'll just be like, I wonder what'll happen if we go through this door.
Lukewarmgames.com. We could do it. That'd be cool.
It's very fun and very worth every bit of...
Nice.
Every moment of
it. Well, I'm excited at how much you enjoyed it, because that's always cool.
Yeah.
I love that game. Yeah, yeah. A game I recently completed while you were playing Subnautica, I was finishing Ratchet & Clank Rift Apart, which we talked about couple weeks ago on the show, but I just wanted to revisit it a little bit now that I finished the game. Super awesome. Really, really enjoyed it. I think it's definitely my favorite PS5 exclusive up until this point. I think it's the best example of the technology at its finest, whether it's insanely quick load times, the way it utilizes the adaptive triggers and haptic feedback with the different weapons. Visually, it's incredibly stunning, and just the cast of characters, you know, Ratchet and Clank are such beloved characters from my childhood, and it was fun to see them again in PS5 technical glory. And I think the story, while it was predictable, was also just very fun and whimsical, and sometimes you just need that. And I wouldn't say it's my game of the year necessarily, but it's definitely one of my favorite gaming experiences this year. You know, Insomniac just knows how to make a fun video game, and this is a truly fun video game. So I really enjoyed it, and once again, highly recommend people check it out.
Awesome. Very cool.
And then one more that I had to mention that I've been playing along the lines of Annapurna theme, because this was an Annapurna published title that was recently released on Game Pass, The Last Stop, which is from the developers of Virginia, another kind of narrative-based, you could call it the walking simulator game, or whatnot. I don't like that term. I feel like it's kind of derogatory, but point being is it's a very narrative-centered game that you are interacting with and choosing dialogue options in the case of The Last Stop. So The Last Stop is a narrative game that centers on three people and their very distinct lives, but also how they intertwine in unique ways. Without spoiling anything, this game kind of has a little bit of a sci-fi thriller narrative angle, but it starts very simply. You have a single dad, you have a young teenager, and you have kind of a middle-aged woman, and just their different walks of life. I haven't finished the game. I'm probably about halfway through. But it's really interesting to kind of peel back the layers of the onion, and I don't want to get into a ton of specifics about what's happened in the story, but it starts very simply, and then it adds layers to it of
cool,
interesting twists and things like that. And I think if you enjoy narrative-centered experience, this is definitely a cool one to check out. And along the lines of supporting indie studios with Annapurna, I think this is a cool one.
Right on.
For folks to play, especially since it's on Game Pass. I mean, if you have the service, it's free. And it strikes me, like I said, I'm halfway through it and I played it over the course of my 2 days off. It's a great weekend game. You know, play it over the course of a couple days. So,
Highly recommend. Yeah, I will check it out.
Cool. Have you been playing anything else you want to shout out? Or
The Animal Crossing. It looks like for the fireworks shows. Any new updates
recently?
Yeah, so they're bringing fireworks shows back for August like they did last summer, which is fun. Cool. I love seeing the fireworks. And it looks like you can get, it doesn't look like you can. You can get food treats in the raffle now, in addition to, like, last year you got balloons, fireworks, sizzlers, what are those called? Sparklers. And bubbles and things like that. And pinwheels and stuff stuff you can hold and interact with, which is fun. But now you get a bunch of, like, there's little food treat options and fun stuff that you get by surprise. And those are really cute too, so that's fun.
I'm curious at this point, because you've played a lot of the game, you've paid off your loans, you fully upgraded house long ago. What's driving you to keep playing at this point?
Honestly, I still haven't gotten those goddamn blue roses, and I'm not going to stop until I do. That's what's going on. I have tried so many different chains. I'm working on the one, I think it's Kelly Plagues.
Her GameSpot guide?
Yeah.
Yep, yep.
And I've been following that guide since fucking March, and I still haven't gotten to the end of the chain.
For sure.
And there have been a couple weeks when I've just been busy and I've stopped checking in on the game, and that probably has slowed down the progress, but, like, I don't think it's statistically been this challenging for other people. I think I'm facing some uneven odds here, and I don't know why.
That's fair to say, but basically that, like, completion, the cataloging aspect is still pulling you back.
Yeah, I want to get all the fish and the bugs, and I want to fill up my museum, and I want to get blue roses. And I also just recently realized I never got cherries from anyone, so I might reach out to some friends to get cherries.
So you got things to do.
Yeah, that's what it is. And I like the seasonal updates, too. Like, when they add, like, the Halloween update, even if I've gotten blue roses at that point, like, say I finished and it's Christmas time, I'm still going to go back and check in for the Christmas update, because I like it getting the new furniture and stuff.
For sure. Fun.
I just like it.
It's good vibes.
Yeah.
And it's one of those that I always say I'm going to go back to, and then I haven't really recently, I like knowing it's there.
Yeah.
Like, I.
But if you don't have the motivation to, like, get the new stuff, then it kind of makes it, like, that's a driving force, like you said.
I do like the holiday stuff. Like, when we played on Halloween, when we played over Christmas, like, that was cool. Snowballs
together.
Yeah, like, that was really fun.
Yeah.
And, I it is just kind of a world that occasionally I like to go visit.
Yeah.
Have a little vacation.
You should come watch fireworks with me.
Yeah, right on.
Since we definitely can't watch any in person here in California, please, no more wildfires.
That's true. So far, it's been not as bad as last summer, so that's good.
Yes. Fingers crossed. but yeah, no, that's why I keep playing.
Right on. Shall we move on to questions with Claire?
Let's do it. So this week's question, what are your expectations for The Last of Us TV show, HBO show, now that we have seen some photos from the set and had some more casting news?
Well, I'm just super hyped, to be honest. Nice. The more I see of it, the more I'm like, yeah, it seems like they're doing it right.
Okay.
every time that we get a bit of casting news, it seems like they're getting people that, one, are talented actors, but also are interested in the property and are interested in portraying the property in unique ways. And they announced that they're dumping, like, what was it, $10 million or something crazy into each episode, or maybe it was even more. Like, there's a lot of money going into this show, and
it sounds like they're really committing to, like, making the set pieces be really immersive.
Yeah, and those set photos that we saw, it was kind of the early stages of the game where Joel, Sarah, and Tommy are in the car, and you start to see the military blockades and different things like that. It really seems like they're tackling the vibe of the show. It kind of, the set photos also remind me of the set in A Quiet Place Part 2, where it shows like the opening of the city, like before the outbreak as it's beginning and that sort of thing. But yeah, it just looks really cool. And it's cool to see that world that I love so much, like, coming to life. Like, just seeing the actors for Joel, Sarah, and Tommy in the car together was that's really awesome. Like, now I can kind of see the vibe. I can see them playing off of each other. Even if maybe they don't look exactly like what I envisioned, like, I think they care about the characters, and I'm excited to see what they do with it. And then the big casting news of Tess.
Anna Torv
from
Fringe. I was screaming when I saw that. Well, I was just like, yes!
We've been rewatching Fringe together since you got it for your birthday from your mom and brothers, and, like, I was really hyped for that, too, and I'm not even, like, the OG biggest Fringe fan, but, like, that was a cool
casting where we are in the show, you haven't really gotten to the parts where you really see her chops.
You see,
Yeah.
Well, and she's definitely a very talented actress, you know what I mean? Like, so I'm really excited to see what she does with the character, and it'll also be interesting to see, like, how much screen time she gets in terms of, like, how much Tess is in the game versus how much she'll be in the show. Like,
I will say,
I hope she gets time to develop her character, because I think it could be really interesting.
I will say the pacing of these HBO shows is really interesting. We've been watching His Dark Materials season 2. We're a little bit behind on that train. And as a fan of the books, it's really interesting to see how they drag some parts out and shorten other parts.
Accelerate stuff.
And add things that weren't there before, and then don't really hone in on things that were made a bigger deal in the books, and, like, how they are looking at the perspective. And I wonder if that's going to be the case for The Last of Us as well. Like, I wonder if they're going to be less concerned with, like, a shot-for-shot remake, and if they're more going to be kind of telling a slightly different version. What, like, the same story,
what I hope is that they tell the base story, but we get maybe a little bit more time with characters like Tess, where we get to see what was going on with her and Joel before they met Ellie, you know what I mean, and things like that. Like, I want to see that in before time a little bit, but I also want to just fill in the blanks a little bit of things that the game didn't talk about, while also giving us those essential moments. I feel like this is the first time where a property that I love more than anything is being adapted into something else, whether it's book into movie or video game into show. Like, this is the one of the most special pieces of media to me, The Last of Us. So I will be the fine-tooth comb criticizer over here while watching it. I'm ultimately I know I'm gonna enjoy the hell out of it, but like, I definitely think I will, like, be very interested to see, like, oh, they didn't talk about that, oh, they did intertwine this, like, collectible, like, notes that you found of Ish in the sewers. Like, are they gonna include any of that
you're
in
gonna,
the show?
You're,
like,
gonna be like,
have
me,
all these little references to things.
You're, like, gonna be like me with His Dark Materials, pausing every 5 minutes and being like, no, you remember, if you recall in the game, they actually did this.
Well, at
earlier.
Least in this case, you've played the games, and in
this is
my
true.
Case, I haven't read the books. Not that I'm opposed to reading the books, I just haven't read them before watching this show.
Well, sometimes you're like, man, why are they showing all this magisterian stuff? This is really boring. And I'm just like, I honestly don't know, because it was like a throwaway line someone mentioned to another person in passing this entire section in
I
the
think
book.
if you're interested in more of his Dark Materials talk, we'll probably talk about it on our monthly Patreon show.
Sorry.
But no, no, no. I'm not.
I just thought it was an interesting comparison.
No, no. And it totally is because of the HBO connection. I wasn't trying to cut you off. I was just saying, I think we have more to talk about on that.
And they
that
share
note.
An actress, too, so it's kind of on my brain because Bella Ramsey is Angelica.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Which I will say she looks incredibly young in his Dark Materials, but it's definitely been a few years since that was filmed, so I think she's a wonderful actress, and I am very interested to see how she plays Ellie, but I'm still convinced she's too young to play the character.
I don't know. I guess we'll see. I think all the actors in that show look a little bit younger than they really are, though.
But maybe
Daphne
that's the
Keane
vibe.
Looks pretty young in the show for how old she really is.
You mean in his Dark Materials? Yeah, that's true, I suppose. Anywho.
Anyway.
good TV talk.
Super stoked about The Last of Us TV show. Super stoked about Tess.
Based on the fact that they're filming it now, I'd have to imagine maybe next year we see it. Maybe later. TV works a bit differently than, like, video games, you know what I mean? They don't need years to develop it,
but it's always
I'm sure
with
the
COVID.
Pandemic has made things difficult.
I'd probably
say, like, next fall, if not early next year. I could see, like, January 2022. Yeah. Maybe.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're releasing information about it. They wouldn't do that if they didn't want to build up hype and not have it be, like, a whole lot of time before the thing actually comes out. The hype dies down, you know. So I'm optimistic. We'll get it before too long. Yay!
Cool. Well, Claire, thank you so much for joining, as always.
Super fun, as always.
Thank you, listeners, so much for listening to this week's episode. Some quick housekeeping items. Please subscribe to our show on your podcast platform of choice. We are now officially on Wow, I'm getting tongue-tied today. We are now officially on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and more. If you enjoy our podcast, consider supporting us on patreon.com/lukewarmgames for exclusive podcasts and more. You can follow at Lukewarm Games on Twitter to get the latest updates on our show. And with that, have a fantastic week. Cheers and happy gaming.